Did you know only 24% of the STEM workforce includes members of underrepresented minority groups? At ACD, we're passionate about fostering diversity in STEM. That's why we've teamed up with the Future of STEM Scholars Initiative, also known as FOSSI, to offer scholarships for students pursuing STEM degrees at historically Black colleges and universities. Join ACD on June 24th at Lansdowne Resort in Lansdowne, Virginia for Swings for STEM. Help us expand the number of scholarships offered through a fun golf tournament in collaboration with the American Chemistry Council. Your participation will directly contribute to empowering aspiring students to pursue their dreams in STEM and grow the diversity of our workforce. Let's make a difference together. Reserve your spot today at www.acd-chem.com.
Welcome to ChemLine, inside the chemical distribution industry. I'm your host, Eric Beyer. Each episode, we take on topics that you need to know as they relate to the chemical distribution industry and how they could affect your business and even your everyday life. Chemicals play a pivotal role in modern civilization, and we invite you to join us as we dive into the challenges and innovations that ensure the safe and efficient distribution of chemicals wherever they are needed. Let's get to today's story.
The attacks lasted more than 7 hours. It began Sunday at 9:15 a.m., a ballistic missile fired from Iranian-backed Houthis in Yemen, landing in the waters near the cargo ship Unity Explorer. At 12 p.m., the USS Kearney on patrol in the Red Sea when a drone launched from Yemen heads toward the Kearney. The Navy crew shoots it down. At 12:35, the Unity Explorer under fire again. This time, the missile strikes the ship, while another drone is shot down as it heads towards the Kearney. At 3:30 p.m., the cargo ship number 9 struck by a ballistic missile. 1 hour later, ballistic missile number 4 hits the cargo vessel Sophie. Again, the Kearney racing to this cargo vessel to render aid as yet another drone is launched in the Kearney's direction and shot down.
Welcome to ChemLine, inside the chemical distribution industry. I'm your host, Eric Beyer, and that was ABC News reporting on the attacks on commercial ships in the Red Sea. In today's episode, we'll be examining the effects of these attacks and the impact they've had on the global supply chain. In the face of global security threats, ACD members are undeniably impacted. Here is Nick Breslin, Manager of Regulatory Affairs for ACD, to shed light on these effects.
Dating back to late November, Houthi militants in Yemen have begun firing on container ships that are going through the Red Sea. And this has created a significant disturbance in ocean shipping, as about 30% of the world's container traffic uses the Red Sea to get cargo to and from Asia and Europe, the Gulf Coast, and the East Coast of the United States. And this has caused about 90% of container ships that would typically use that shipping lane to be rerouted around the Cape of Good Hope in Africa, which can add anywhere from 10 days to multiple weeks to those shipments, which is causing an increase in transit time, of course, as well as an increase in costs. And so we're seeing this increase in cost in both the spot rate market and as well in the contract market through increase in surcharges on shipments. The FMC approved a number of special provisions allowing these surcharges to go through without waiting the typically mandated 30 days. And ACD members are seeing these spot rates anywhere from a couple hundred dollars per container to thousands of dollars per container. And they are seeing these spot rates whether their shipments are going from Asia to the East or Gulf Coast, or if they're going from Asia to the West Coast, which is extremely concerning to us as these are shipments that would not typically use the Red Sea. And so we're very concerned that ocean carriers may be using this as an opportunity to increase their profits and have higher surcharges even when not warranted.
Bud Dahr is the Executive Vice President for Maritime Policy and Government Affairs at the MSC Group in Geneva, Switzerland. Bud clarifies the following measures the MSC is taking in response to the Red Sea attacks.
Well, once we came to the conclusion that the situation was just no longer safe for us to put our seafarers in harm's way in the Red Sea, we immediately began efforts to basically rewire our network to avoid the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. And we then announced that to the public after we'd begun to take some quiet measures on our own. And that has continued. And what that's involved is more complicated than it seems on its face. It means that the transit distances are longer. It means that in order to maintain service frequency, you have to go faster, which at that point on the power curve actually is a pretty substantial increase in the fuel costs. And subsequently, for those cargoes that go to Europe in one way or another, increases the exposure to the European carbon tax or the emission trading system.
Bud explains that they've had to reactivate ships into their network, as well as additional equipment into the network, and reposition it.
We are fortunate that we had planned for having some excess capacity, and we invested in that. It's allowed us to be much more resilient and respond to the customer's needs. Although it comes with a cost, it comes with an inconvenience, but we're starting to see things stabilize both operationally, and I think the market commentators, the analysts, think they've seen a top in the market as far as the price pressure goes that's reflective of the additional costs we've had to incur.
One in five commercial ships are now avoiding the Red Sea because of the threat of attack. That's according to the International Chamber of Shipping. It includes ships operated by two of the world's biggest shipping firms, Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd. The Red Sea accounts for 15% of the world's shipping and plays a crucial part in the global supply chain. UK companies have been telling the BBC that shipping delays could push up prices.
As reported by BBC News, such a disturbance to a crucial part of the global supply chain could have timing and financial implications that affect shippers and consumers around the world.
Like many shippers, we're seeing the effects of the disruption in terms of the expansion of our lead times coming from Southeast Asia going into Gulf and East Coast plants.
Jeff Dixon is the Director of International Trade Services for ACD member Univar Solutions. Jeff provides insight on the specific delays and price disparities he is experiencing as a customer amidst the ongoing crisis in the Red Sea.
We've certainly not been immune to the delays that are happening because of ships being rerouted around the Cape. How we've adapted is that we have a good partnership with our product teams and our commercial teams where we outline the situation, and that within our internal systems, we've now updated them to reflect the extended transit times so that now that we're aligned from our product planning, our logistics teams, that we all have in essence the same view of the lead time. So this is helping us, if you will, extend our planning horizon so that we can anticipate what the demands are further down the road because of the extended lead times.
Jeff goes on to explain the operational adjustments Univar is making to address and adapt to the disruptions in the Red Sea.
Coming out of COVID, we re-engineered our international supply chain to broaden our supplier base, our carrier alliances across all the major carrier alliances that are out there. We put expanded logistical support in each country that we source from, and then we made a level investment in our people and systems, really to give us a greater level of agility to react to the next crisis. We just had no idea it was going to happen so soon with what happened with the Suez Canal and the diverting of ships. So with that investment, it's given us an amazing view upstream that we can anticipate the challenges before they materialize, where we can see the impact from either a cost or delay perspective. With this investment and this reengineering process, our strategy was a little different. We took a very surgical approach in working with our planning groups, our product managers, and our commercial teams to identify the products that were really going to be impacted mostly by extended lead times. And in that vein, we were able to selectively determine new routings for products. We're also able to take a look at within our existing network and knew where our current inventories could sustain the demand. And then we deliver to over 80 different plants here in the United States. And so we have the capability to reposition product within our own network. So ultimately, we're getting the right product to the right place at the right time. All this goes in terms of making sure they're meeting our customer commitments, but also there's a level of cost mitigation that we have to do as well to make sure that we're not overly inflating our expenses associated with making sure that products is moving into the right locations.
Interestingly, this disturbance in the Red Sea has impacted shipments that don't typically use the region, such as Asia to West Coast sailings, but provides some context as to why that might be the case.
Well, it's very important when you look at the operation of a large ocean carrier liner company like us, you can't look at any one single component or leg or port of discharge or point of loading. You really have to think of it as being an interconnected network. And that goes as well, even shoreward, where we are working with either our own capabilities that we provided to the customers or capabilities that they bring for the shoreside transfer of the cargoes as well. If I need extra ships, it's not just any ship. I need ships that actually are fit for the service that we're going to put it on as far as capacity goes and optimal speed ranges go and efficiency goes. And those ships may be in service on another loop in a different part of the world. So we've had to redeploy ships from some loops on to other loops to make up for this. And in addition to ones that we've simply added into the network. And then we also have had substantial logistic challenges in repositioning equipment, because this is, I think, common between pretty much all the large carriers, that we've ended up in a situation where we don't necessarily have the containers in particular and the right types of containers in the places that our customers need them with the adapted network as we see it sitting right today. But we're only about 7 weeks into this at the moment, and we're getting that back in balance. And I think that the Lunar New Year will give us an opportunity to reposition a lot of that equipment.
The crisis in the Red Sea is actually more than just a crisis in the Red Sea. It's really a crisis of transoceanic canals.
Carl Bensel was sworn into office as commissioner of the Federal Maritime Commission in 2019.
It's the Panama Canal and the Red Sea. It's two of the largest seaways transit areas in the world. Panama Canal is operating at about 50% capacity because of the drought and shipping there. And even if you get a route, most ocean carriers have to offload about 10 to 15% of their cargo because of restrictions through the Panama Canal and the Red Sea. The Red Sea, of course, is the entry point from the Suez Canal. So it's most of the shipping from Asia to Europe. And all major container shipping lines have canceled services through the Red Sea because of the issues related to Yemen and the shelling of vessels while in transit.
Carl goes on to identify the FMC's response as a result of the intersection of challenges involving both the Panama Canal and the Red Sea.
The FMC is in the process of starting to evaluate what this means to the industry. We had a hearing last week. We were happy to have had your association provide testimony on the record. I think this is the first step in really assessing what actions could ensue as a result of what's happening, not only through the Red Sea, but the Panama Canal, and what this means to the marketplace. There's a number of venues to help protect the shipping public at the FMC. The first step would be probably to meet with our Consumer Assistance and Dispute Resolution Division. They're set up to provide ombudsman services so that they can reach out to ocean carriers, get specific guidance on what's happening, and help intervene, hopefully, to be able to resolve a situation of challenges in shipping. Our Bureau of Transportation Analysis, you could approach them directly with complaints. They can give you advice about what the requirements are and whether they're being violated. And if you feel that you need to take the next step after inquiry, there is a right to file a complaint with the FMC, a formal complaint. So that process is available. And finally, the FMC also has their own authorities to investigate. We have investigators in the field, and we can take action on our own based on investigations. So information could be provided to the FMC with the request, basically to have us look into it. I think that at the FMC, increasingly, we're going to be getting requests to do the investigation itself. There's a wide range of opportunities for relief at the FMC, from formal disputes to providing assistance to mediate and asking us to investigate.
As concerns over shipping delays continue to grow, it's important to keep in mind the severity of the situation at hand and the dangers that seafarers are facing. It is also important to understand what it will take to reach a level of normalcy and balance in the shipment process once things begin to stabilize.
We've had 3 ships attacked, one of which had a missile actually go through containers on deck. Fortunately, not in a way that caused a major fire. It was a fire we were able to extinguish on board. There's only so many near misses of that sort of thing before you realize this is really a significant thing if you're us, and these seafarers have entrusted their lives to us day to day. We certainly don't say that as an excuse that the market has responded the way that it has and we've had to recover the additional costs the way we have, but I do ask everyone, please keep in mind that at the end of every one of these discussions, there is at the heart of it the real lives of genuine seafarers who are trying to do their job every day. And we need to keep that in mind. But we are very happy to work with our customers, work through this, and we're all settling into a new normal. And the indications are we might be at this for a while.
It's unfolding a little slower than what the public would think, because things that are arriving today usually start a transit 5 weeks from now. So what we're seeing is delayed. And so I believe we're not even going to see the real impacts of the closure of the Red Sea to shipping and the restrictions on the Panama Canal to maybe 1 or 2 months from now. There's a lot of complexity into ocean shipping. So containers and drivers and intermodal rail service all have to be in the right place at the right time to adjust to changes. And so there's a lot of different things that need to occur to keep the ballet moving appropriately without failure.
The question that many people ask is, how long is this going to take to get through? And no one really can answer. But what we can say is that once things resume normalcy coming through the Suez, and that the Panama Canal can also handle sufficient volume, it's going to take the carriers a few months to get those ships redeployed in new schedules, again, to get equilibrium to the network. So there's going to be a period of disequilibrium that happens once this plays out. But over time, ocean carriers normally find a way to get stability into the networks through slow steaming, schedule modifications, cancellations, or scrapping, a lot of the capacity that they no longer need.
Many look at the Red Sea crisis and expect the same level of disruption to the supply chain experienced during the COVID-19 shipping crisis, which led to the enactment of the Ocean Shipping Reform Act. However, there are key differences that contribute to a more manageable outcome this time around.
Watching what was going on early on in this crisis, there was a lot of uncertainty, and everybody was sharing that level of uncertainty. It took a few months, but I think most people, through the conversations that we have with our shipping task force, sort of understand where we're at right now in terms of the global shipping network. It's certainly not a time for panic. The shipping networks will stabilize. Costing may come out on the higher side because of what's going on. But in general, it's not going to be what happened with COVID.
What really happened in COVID, it really the shoreside components of the supply chain that caused the ships to back up and the terminals to be overloaded. It wasn't that somehow the carriers forgot how to operate ships in the middle of the ocean. We always remained very good at that, and that part didn't really change very much. What we have right now is not that situation. The warehoused inventories are significantly lower than they were during the time of the pandemic. And the capacity of the shoreside elements of the transportation networks in the U.S. have a lot more ability to carry surge cargoes.
I think where we've had change is the pandemic was very unexpected. We first had a situation where the illness manifested itself internationally. Elimination of manufacturing in China, where a lot of this production came from, followed after the reinstitution of manufacturing in foreign nations with this huge surge of movement of cargo into the United States. People were staying at home, readjusting their consumer patterns. And so we saw cargo that had been reduced by 20 or 30% being increased by 20 or 30% in a 1 or 2 month period. Frankly, the system was just not adequate to handle that sort of massive swing. In this case, the Suez Canal, the Panama Canal, we're at a market situation where there is capacity at U.S. ports. Shipping lines have been purchasing additional ships. People are aware that there could be dislocation. So we're in a better position to be able to respond to it. That said, the changes that will occur as a result of the Suez Canal being not utilized and the Panama Canal being at half capacity will have greater impacts as time occurs. We're in a better position than we were during the pandemic because that was such an unforeseen consequence of illness, and it changed such a wide range of economic and societal interests. And this time we have huge geopolitical issues and, as we call them, force majeure events on shipping that, even though they're big, we know they're coming and we know that we're in a better position to respond.
Jeff, Bud, and Carl each go over ways their organizations are working to get on the right track and overcome supply chain issues caused by the Red Sea attacks.
You just don't know what that next shock to the system is going to be. So the best advice is that make your supply chain as agile as possible. Keep your relationships with your carriers and your 3PLs and your forwarders very tight. Because if there's one thing I think that we've learned through COVID and shipping is relationships matter.
We were largely able to respond, we think, quite effectively and quite quickly because we had built extra capacity into our network for a variety of reasons, but this was not one we had anticipated specifically. But generally speaking, it definitely offered us the ability to be more resilient when uncontrollable events cause a need for change. And so I would look for companies that are similarly situated in our business to look for ways where they can have additional capacity available beyond just what pure supply and demand in the marketplace must require.
The FMC, even before OSFR 22, had some authorities. What OSFR did is it really clarified our abilities to protect the shipping public from malpractices. We do have additional authority through our charge complaint process to assess the reasonableness of all charges. And so we can take steps to challenge what we feel is unreasonable practices in the implementation of charges.
The unfortunate attacks on commercial ships in the Red Sea have once again shaken up the global supply chain. However, leaders in the maritime industry like Jeff, Bud, and Carl show resilience as they navigate the situation at hand and offer a sign of hope that shipment processes can reach a level of normalcy sooner than what we experienced during the COVID-19 pandemic. Thank you for tuning into ChemLine. If you like what you heard, please like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on social media at Alliance for Chemical Distribution on LinkedIn, at ACD_Chem on X, formerly known as Twitter. Don't hesitate to reach out to us with story ideas, questions, or concerns. We can be reached at communications@acd-chem.com. For now, we'll catch you on the next episode of ChemLine.
Are you ready to advocate for the chemical distribution industry? This year, join ACD at our annual Washington fly-in happening on May 15th and 16th. In this pivotal election year, your voice carries even more weight within the hallowed halls of Congress. This is your chance to be a driving force in shaping the future of an industry that touches so many lives on a daily basis. Join us as we amplify our voice and redefine the conversation surrounding chemical distribution. Register now at acd-chem.com to ensure your voice is heard. We hope to see you in Washington on May 15th.